The holy secrets of nature cannot be misused, and Akan's civilization is the guardian of these secrets. They have full awareness of their cosmic origin and affinity with nature. Man's inhumanity to man must cease before these holy secrets of nature can be revealed for the benefit of all humanity on Earth, for the benefit of all fauna and flora. Only then will humanity achieve the destiny of all nations and peoples to attain wholeness and harmony with the universe, and to become one with the great interstellar human family. But expansion of thought will only come in the wavelength of time when the insight of humans has reached a deeper and more spiritual level. What wonderful thoughts can be created for the benefit of a planet? I said. Yes, my dear, they can, but only by the right people. In the hands of wrong people and politics, thoughts and words can be put into the minds of others, simply with the biological effects of low-level microwave radiation. This is completely foreign to us, Akan said sternly. In fact, it is the opposite of what we do. We use our own minds as a source of effective radiation to communicate with others. Telepathy, in other words, as you have already experienced. People on Earth use cosmic energy, or light, for destructive purposes. Radio wave propagation, nuclear bombs and nuclear power stations, all these are used in the wrong way. People have not the intelligence or the savvy to understand cosmic energy. And this is why we keep apart and away from people of Earth, for we shall never share the secrets of light with them. The electromagnetic waveform or light is the unified field of matter and antimatter throughout the universe, Akan explained, turning back to watch the viewing lens as we approached the great mothership. We move within the protection of our spaceship as she alters the wavelength of light to create a shift in space and time for movement from one point or place to another. 4. An escape route to the stars. Now, as we approach the mothership, Akan continued, you will understand how she generates the unified field. I have just been generalizing to give you a picture of the method we use, which is a duplication of nature, and therefore safe. You will know far more later, of course, even about the formula we use to generate the unified field for space journeys and how we control electricity and gravity through light for the benefit of our civilization. Humankind, although highly adaptable, cannot exist in space without the time cycle and atmospheric pressure in which they have evolved. A spaceship of this nature generates all these things for us in a manner similar to our home planet. The mothership is not at all suitable for travel through the intergalactic void. The shape is wrong, but since they never wear out, we will continue to use them for travel in the home galaxy. How can a large spaceship like this one enter the mothership? I asked. This type of spaceship has no need for a carrier. We attach it to the larger vessel. It instantly bonds with a projected entrance, and we simply walk through. The smaller craft, which are used solely for planetary exploration, move into the mothership through a series of airlocks, where they are carried in large hangars. Then you are quite independent? Yes. This is my ship. I can move from one planet to another, land if I wish, or travel to other solar systems. My ship is equipped with all necessities and, as a scientific survey vehicle, is quite independent of any larger vessel. I am a scientist and my work takes me to many planets and solar systems. I know. Am I to be scientifically examined too? My dear enough, Akan said gently, and gathered me up in his arms. He turned to a section of the circular wall and approached it. A door slid open, through which I saw the brilliantly lit interior of the mothership. He carried me through and then put me down, keeping his arm around my waist as if I were captured booty. People clustered around us, and a young woman spoke in perfect English. She has slant eyes and golden hair, the woman said. She is descended from our original stock left behind on Earth, so it is right for her to be here with us now. They chatted with us for a while, until one of them addressed Akan in a language that sounded not unlike Latin. Then, gathering me up again, Akan carried me away from the gay crowd and up several stairways. I noticed lifts from the lower deck, but the low gradient and deep comfort of the stairs required no effort at all to climb. We were laughing together as we reached the top, where we found the commander coming to meet us. He smiled and gave a slight bow. As Akin put me down, he came forward and kissed me on both cheeks. "Welcome, my dear," he said. "I am Akin's brother." Stepping aside, he motioned us into a spacious room whose beauty and comfort caused me to catch my breath again. It had the same soft, glowing illumination and fresh air, and gave one the sense and feeling of being outdoors on a beautiful day. The sapphire walls and ceiling gave an impression of a depth of sky, and flowers and brilliant green plants grew in white caskets. Exotic trees cast soft shadows on luxurious divans covered in shimmering rose silks, and the entire floor was covered in a wealth of soft blue grass. "Is it real?" I asked in amazement. "Of course it is." Akin laughed as he lifted me up like a feather and placed me on one of the divans. As I sank into its firm comfort, I realized how exhausted I had become with all the intense excitement. "We shall now have some refreshment. You are very tired, my beloved, and in need of the correct sustenance," Akin observed. I looked at Akin and the commander. The tall brothers were very alike. Both had the ascetic features of an ancient race, and bore the graceful dignity and joyful relaxation of centuries of good breeding and right thinking and living. Both were wearing the same type of plain uniform, designed for comfort and air circulation, made out of a very thin material and fitting like a second skin. Questions again trembled on my lips, but I checked the impulse for the moment, knowing that it was inopportune. Akin knew my thoughts, and his slanted eyes glanced down at me with tender possession. Talk and the incessant chatter of voices was not their way. The quieter relaxation of mental telepathy was their mode of communication. With a sigh, I relaxed back on the soft but firm divan, stretching my limbs out in an ecstasy of delicious comfort. There was complete peace and quiet, with not even a murmur from the vast spaceship. I felt out of place, however, in my heavy Earth-type clothes. I sat up quickly, slipped my shoes off and placed them on the fresh grass. The divan was low to the floor and I could put my hand into the cool, moist blue grass. Its fragrance wafted up into my face. I wished that I could get out of my clothes and change into something more suitable. As we think and live, so the universe responds to us. A golden tray laden with delicious salads and fruits appeared, literally materializing onto the white table beside the divan, along with long-stemmed crystal containers in which golden fruit juice sparkled. "The light ray placed it there for you," Akin said with a smile. "You had better have some of that sustenance before I answer your questions. I wondered about that wonderful light ray. I had felt its fleeting warmth as the tray of food appeared. The fruit juice was simply lovely, with a flavor of ripe pomegranates. The salads consisted of delicate, bright green leaves and various cut vegetables mixed with crisp nuts, flavored with almonds and spices with a creamy dressing sprinkled over. Crisp, juicy fruits like large apricots and thin slices of moist, fresh oat bread completed the most delicious meal I had ever had. We assimilate all the protein and vitamins we need from this diet," Akin's brother told me. "There is no need to get it secondhand through animal meat, as people of Earth do. It is all grown here in the spaceship. Therefore, it is always fresh. It is natural for you to enjoy this type of food. Your body craves it after the heavy, cooked meals prepared on Earth, which you must not touch again. Please tell me your name," I said. "And how is it that you are so well acquainted with the customs, manners and language of Earth people?" "My name is Haben," he replied, "and it is all quite simple. We have observed Earth for eons of her time. Look into our electric mirage, my dear. Then you will understand." Beside the gold tray was a casket, shimmering with the iridescence of mother of pearl. Opening it, Haben selected a tiny, shimmering roll of the same material. He went to the wall, where he fitted it to a groove. Instantly, a scene in color appeared in a curtain of minute detail across the spacious room, showing the everyday happenings in part of a city on Earth. "Why," I exclaimed, "it's Durban." the marine parade in perfect detail. The sea and the people, even the rickshaw boys, in all their finery, showing in minute detail. And I can hear what they are saying to each other. No wonder you know all about the peoples of Earth. The scene had materialized like a great curtain in front of us, in color with movement and sound. The molecules of air were electrified and activated to reflect the scene and portray it before us as if we were standing on that very spot ourselves, instead of thousands of miles away in space. I put my hand out to touch the nearest rickshaw boy, a tall Zulu clad in brightly colored finery with oxtails hanging from a beaded band around his legs just below the knees and dried seed pods tied about his ankles. They rattled as he pranced within the shafts of his carriage. "I'm the finest," he called to his companions. "People will come to me first. I have more strength than any of you." A tingling sensation enveloped my arm as it passed through the image. The magic of the scene remained intact as two people walked between the tall Zulu and me to board his rickshaw. I was fascinated and enthralled. Haben removed the roll and the scene faded to nothing, and the length of the luxurious room lay before my astonished gaze once more. "I first saw you by means of this electric mirage, as we call it," Haben said. "You were sitting on the mountaintop. I was observing the southern portion of Africa at the time. Akin was with me. He told me how he had observed you as a child, your delicate face a study in wonder and awe as you watched his spaceship slowly cross the sky. We have watched you at other times as you were growing up. You are no stranger to me, my dear. Is this why you are now educating me to your way of life?"
"Yes, my dear,"
Haben said softly. "You are now one of us, and we have chosen you to mate with Akin. Our gentle race is in need of new blood to perpetuate its strength throughout the home galaxy. Akin was watching me. I knew he was reading my thoughts as I looked into his eyes, those wonderful, gentle gray eyes that held me spellbound. I went to him, and he folded me in his arms and held me close, so close. Where, in all my long years and travels on Earth, had I ever seen such a man as he?" With my face against his chest, I asked, "Is it true that the surface of the home planet is mainly covered by seas of sapphire blue reflected from a dark blue sky, with emerald isles scattered over the seas, their mountain tops glowing rose red in the sunlight and the soft green hills sweeping down to the sea? We shall show you the home planet shortly, in the electric mirage, and you will see, my beloved, how correct your knowledge is. This knowledge is within you. You were born with it, a race memory retained in time to bring us together within the magnetic fold of the universe. As we think and live, so the universe responds to us as we are within ourselves. It is an attitude of mind, a way of life, a gentle way of life from which we are born." This wondrous truth silenced my heart to a glorious tranquility. I was not alien, I belonged. Akin held me closer. "Love is a force," he whispered, "a being that needs understanding. Love is the electric force of life, the very breath and essence of life. Love is the flame of eternal beauty. Love is wonderful, and by love, one achieves supreme happiness. People who cannot love become spiritually and physically ill. Not for them the riches of the soul. They live contrary to its laws, thereby misunderstanding the true meaning of love and how it is food and life to the soul. Love needs to manifest within, to radiate outward, encompassing all within its radiating field as the star of our system encircles the inner planets within its vast corona. To love all things is to enfold oneself within this magnetic field of positive existence, to commune and become one with nature and live in harmony with the universe. One is alerted to the pulse of life and answers stream into the brain, telling us what to do and how to live. Once we are attuned to the pulse of light, or life, we move in harmonic rhythm with our galaxy and universe, and there is no need for hate and dissension. People on Earth do not understand this, and the fair lands of Earth are swept by the mass insanity of its peoples. As a physicist, I explore how nature behaves, and in this way we find the answers to our environment and are able to duplicate that environment within our spaceships.
We let nature work for us and enjoyed the beauty and comfort she provides without upsetting the balance and harmony of the environment. Our home planet is retained in this way. The environment and overall climate are equable and beneficial to our health. People of Earth need to go forward, and not to look back and live in their past. Otherwise they will not survive. We understand nature and our environment, and we avoid her ruthless violence and destruction. We counteract or anticipate our moods and observe very closely the behavior of stars and planets, as it is the stars and solar systems that control and affect the climates of planets. We understand and know well the cosmos in which we all have our being. The average human being on Earth does not live long enough to attain great understanding and wisdom. Ignorance and fear still remain the fear from which hate and wars breed. It is your environment that breeds the impassive cruelty that manifests itself in human nature. Mankind's ego has always been bolstered up with the idea that his must be the only advanced and civilized race in the galaxy. Now, the realization that a race from a far perfected space traveled eons ago comes as a great shock, striking at the very roots and foundations of the narrow and orthodox teachings of humankind on Earth. Humankind is a creature of space. Humanity is a space race, living on a planet in orbit around a star as others are also doing. Mankind is not unique, as he so fondly imagines. He believes in his singular creation with a credence that is quite fantastic, but he is merely a part of the vast interstellar human family bred and nurtured by us through the aeons of time on planets in different solar systems throughout the galaxy. The level of civilization of races and peoples can only be measured by their degree of compassion. People of Earth can no longer be bound to the surface of their planet like creatures of two dimensions crawling about the length and breadth of their domain. They will now soar into the third dimension, height. They will see themselves as they really are, for adjustments will have to be made to their way of thinking and living before understanding and control of their environment can take place. This is of paramount importance for their advancement and for their continuing existence. If they do not change for the better, they will destroy themselves. And we will have no alternative but to destroy their planet to retain the harmonic balance within the sun's system. Fair lands have been destroyed by humankind in the sun's solar system in the past. Whole planets have been laid bare and ravaged by their destructive ways. Is that what happened to Mars? I interrupted. Indeed, yes. Our forebears who remained within the sun's system were not able to advance as we have been able to do. This is purely environmental. The sun is a variable star, and the planets are subjected to epochs of change, thereby creating vast setbacks for advancing civilizations. We will now tell you about the history of the sun's system. Alpha Centauri, our home system where conditions for life like ours are more ideal than they are within the sun's system. I am about to move into interstellar space to complete a mission to the constellation of Lyra. Akin said. I am going there to observe a supernova. We are now replenishing my spaceship from the vast mothership, and we will have some time together for you to understand the history of this system in which you live, my dear. Oh. I said, and stopped. I could say no more. I suddenly felt the moment charged with that particular poignancy and deep emotion that always threatens my self-control. With a lump in my throat, I watched Akin's dear face, as he gently said, calm your questing mind and relax in the happiness of the present. Whatever may happen in time, there is always a reason for it. How can I live through time with the trackless fathoms of space separating us like the darkness of eternal night? Beloved one, I shall be with you always, Akin softly replied. Our destiny is bound together. A telepathic link binds our souls in eternal love. Our lives are entwined as a thread of gold weaves a pattern in the sky. Gently he put his hand under my chin, tilting my head up and back, and looked deep into my eyes. My love, my life, my chosen mate, he whispered, his voice soft with emotion. I will return to possess you, and sow the seed of my love within your delicate body. The mark of my love will remain within your soul forever. Gathering me up in his arms, he held me close for a moment before carrying me out of the luxurious room and away along a wide and beautiful stairway. Silently we passed over the rich, thick carpeting and down a spacious passageway. I glanced into the airy rooms we passed, bright with glorious colors, where many people relaxed. Other people moved about as men, women and children. They smiled their greetings as they went about their various duties within the great spaceship. All were fair of complexion, tall and beautiful, soft-spoken and gentle and moving with a natural grace and rhythm. The women wore simple and diaphanous apparel, low-cut and gathered around the waist to fall in graceful folds to the ankles. These garments were of classic beauty in different exotic colors. They shimmered with a silky sheen, folding over the contours of the naked bodies underneath and caressing the skin with a silky touch. All the women had bare and lovely feet, and they moved with the ease and freedom of perfect health. The men wore very simple silk garments, a form of close-fitting knee breeches, with no covering to hide the natural strength and beauty of their feet, while the children wore the same type of silk garment, just a single garment with nothing underneath. "I'm glad I left my shoes under the divan," I said. "I feel so out of place in these heavy clothes. I wish I could wear one of those lovely silk garments that allow one's body to breathe. They look so very relaxing. There is no extreme of climate unless you step out onto the surface of an alien planet. That is why you are wearing the type of uniform you are. You even covered your feet, because you stepped out of your spaceship when you landed for me. Harmony of movement in time with your mind this first time has been very successful." Akin laughed as he swiftly set me on my feet again in a beautiful room. "I focused your mind on moving with the spaceship and not on extraneous things such as clothes. How lovely it is here," I exclaimed. "Not only the beauty and comfort of our surroundings, but also the perfect beauty of communication and words. Humans of the sun's system have lost the art of words and communication. Not for them the beauty of writing and words. They can now only express themselves in short, sharp syllables like the grunting of so many primitives. They have lost the art of their mother tongue through laziness and the continuous watching of television, and by never taking part in anything themselves. It depends on the programs presented, my beloved. Now, look." There was color everywhere. Rose red predominated in the carpeting and wall coverings. The low, comfortable seats were made of a soft golden material with threads of emerald green and violet like the colors of the spectrum. A tall man with his arms folded across his chest stood watching a scene in the electric mirage that shimmered in minute detail across the far end of the room. Turning, he came toward us and placed both his hands on my shoulders, and kissed me on both cheeks. "I'm happy Akin has found you," the man said. "Welcome, my dear, to our civilization. Akin's work as a scientist is sometimes dangerous, though. You must have courage. Never forget this." I looked into his golden eyes, so kindly and concerned. As he returned my long look, I understood how unknown the future would be. "I am tuned into the vibration of our home planet in the star system of Alpha Centauri," he continued in his quiet, gentle voice, "our home system where conditions for life like ours are more ideal than they are within the sun's system. The broader ecosphere, the area surrounding a star where conditions permit development and the existence of life as we know it, is intensified by a binary system. This supportive life and advanced development on the planets revolving in orbit about our stars is caused by the radiations and ultraviolet emanations that produce their oxygen atmosphere. Our home planet is well within this stupendous radiating ecosphere, which is further augmented by a third star similar to the Sun, thus the vibratory rate is higher and ideal for the advanced development of our civilization. The home system is a triplex system, receiving the radiations from three stars, similar to the Sun but 4 light-years away, or 38 billion kilometers. It would take an astronaut from Earth 4 years to reach Alpha Centauri, that is, if he were able to travel with the speed of light as Earth scientists understand it. With our spaceships,
This distance is instantly annihilated. Our civilization existed on Earth eons ago, after we moved out from the mother planet, Venus. We were advised by our scientists to do so at that time in the history of the Sun's system, as the Sun was breathing out its breath of life in the cosmic cycle of solar expansion. The Sun has, in the past, shown signs of its variable nature, the corona expanding out with lethal radiations to engulf the planets, destroying all flora and fauna. This occurs in cycles of time. It is a natural phenomenon, and stars of this nature are observed very closely by us. Then your civilization originated in this solar system, I exclaimed with joy. How wonderful! There is a link between us. People on Earth are not alien. Indeed, that is so. Our great civilization flourished for thousands of years on Earth, before we moved out to a neighboring solar system where the stars are stable suns, suitable for our way of life. We left some of our people on Earth and on Mars, but through the centuries the environment of the variable star, the Sun, has had a negative effect on their thinking and way of life. They became thoughtless and destructive, nearly wrecking Earth many times, and turning Mars into a desert. Venus died in the last cycle of solar expansion when all flora and fauna were destroyed by lethal stellar radiations. Her proximity to the star of her system caused our scientists to study the Sun very closely. They found that the Sun's atmosphere engulfs the planetary system, and that any changes occurring in the Sun would affect the planets and their atmospheres. The star of this system is a middle-aged, yellow variable, somewhat irregular in the radiation of short wavelengths. We all live within the ecosphere of our stars, and the stability of each planet within a solar system depends on the radiations emitted by the stars. The Sun has a tendency toward instability within the gaseous envelope. As the rotational velocity is slowing down, magnetic flip-flops occur in a cycle that varies between 7 and 17 years, averaging about 11 years. Magnetic polarity is reversed at each cycle, and sunspots are triggered by magnetism, emitting brilliant and lethal solar flares. These flares erupt through the photosphere to spew out ionized hydrogen streams of fast protons and electrons toward the planets in the form of deadly solar winds. The electron density in the Earth's ionosphere waxes and wanes in step with the 11-year cycle. Likewise, the auroral displays aloft wax and wane as planet Earth respires within her star's atmosphere. The Earth's ozone layer can be destroyed during a cycle of the Sun's expansion, as the ozone layer of Venus was destroyed, exposing the surface to radiation and thereby destroying all vegetation. Earth survived the last cycle of solar expansion, though it killed off vast numbers of terrible lizards that had flourished extravagantly in the subtropical climate. For millions of years these dinosaurs had dominated Earth, their thick hides like armor plates, a protection against radiation bombardment during that epoch of explosive evolution when the Sun was younger and the climate of Earth very much warmer. Thriving on violence and destruction, their small, weak brains filtered such dim impressions as their limited senses received. They were no match for their changing environment, and when the Sun burst forth in expansive eruption, engulfing your solar system in lethal radiations, they were destroyed over the entire land surface of the planet and in the swamps and shallow seas. The Earth, reacting like a barometer to her star, reversed poles in cataclysmic eruptions all over her surface, burying this thriving life within her breast. While her star shrinks back, smaller and brighter, as each cycle of expansion takes its toll in her scale of evolution, the period of time between each regular period of sweeping death shortens. The aging star is moving again in this epoch to a death throe of expansive radiations. Earth lies well within the great radiating atmosphere of the Sun. The tenuous corona extends so far from the visible disk that Mercury, Venus, Earth and its moon and Mars are enveloped in it. Undoubtedly, these intensified radiations now emitted from the Sun will disturb the Earth's ionosphere, increasing ionization of the outer atmosphere. This in turn will trigger unstable weather patterns throughout the world, affecting global air circulation and rainfall patterns. During the cycle of low-density sunspot activity, droughts occur, and during the cycle of high-density sunspot activity, severe storms and floods occur